All right, we're back, and we are live with Mo Flavor this morning, the Gareth Cliff Show on The Real Network. Subscribe, blah, blah, blah. I hate telling people to do this stuff. Simpiwe, what am I meant to say?
Subscribe, like, and comment.
And don't take it from me. Take it from Simpiwe. She's the real boss of the show this morning, standing in and producing. Thank you very much. Sims, along with Flex, James is away for this week, so you can start abusing him again next week. All right, because that's what people like to do, abuse the producer. Who knows? I don't know how that started. All right, so let's get into some stuff. We were talking about radio a little bit, and I said to Mo during the break that I don't even know what's going on radio, and that's for a good reason, because I don't want to be seen to be one of those people who isn't in radio anymore and sounds even slightest bit bitter, because I know from people like you or from Anele and Fresh, and the few people in radio that I'm in contact with, that things are going fine, right? That's all I need to know.
Well, yeah.
Things not my are business anymore.
Yeah, things are going fine in the sense that there are some very talented people on air. And, you know, radio still means a lot to South Africans across the
absolutely.
Spectrum.
Absolutely.
And that
disagree.
Is the most important thing. Can it be better? Absolutely. Can it do more? Absolutely.
I know some of the guys who are from our era, right? But I don't honestly know who's new and who's making waves. I mean, who should I be looking out for? Who do you think are like breakthrough talent?
So, not necessarily breakthrough talent, but let me throw a couple of names around of people that I enjoy listening to.
Sure.
For different reasons. So, let me start with Talk. I really do enjoy Clement Manyatel on 702. He's actually on at the same time as me, so...
Well, that's difficult.
Yeah, exactly. So before I did this 9 to 12 show that I do now, 947, I would always hop across and listen in on whatever he's got to say. I really enjoy his perspective on stuff, right? I really enjoy how he handled the content, how he engages with the listeners on a number of issues, politics, life.
He seems like a very likable guy.
He is.
I hear from, again, not a big listener to radio, but I hear good things about Clement from people, and that he's fun, he's friendly.
Sure.
He seems to be well admired.
Yeah, yeah, and purely from, I think, the work he does on air, and I think, you know, radio makes you more personable than maybe what he does on television, where he's always dealing about, you're dealing with hard news and all of that stuff on SABC. Yeah, yeah. But his radio show really is quite engaging. I enjoy Ayanda MVP. She's currently on YFM. She's a real talent. I love her energy, and
I know Ayanda.
She's such an amazing, balanced broadcaster. She understands, you know, perspectives. She knows that what is important is what you do on air, not necessarily what you're posting about your show on social media, because people don't listen like that in essence.
Right.
It's listener first and everything else after. I enjoy Nick Hammond, who's on 5. I think he's quite, you know, I like his mind, and he's quite creative in a lot of things that he does. So those are just some of the shows that I really admire.
Okay. No,
some of the people that I enjoy listening to. Yeah.
Honestly, I don't want to have no answer when people ask these things, and I want to say something positive, if anything, right?
At least
I got some, and we can get these people on the show. Did you guys write down those names?
Don't go with what Gareth is saying about radio. But it's interesting you say that, because you talk about how you don't listen. Is it because you don't like what you hear, or
no,
you think what you?
I don't listen because when I get into the car, I've got a stack of playlists I listen to. Of either I'm listening to music, which is rare now, or it's podcasts, because there are certain subjects I'm interested in. I don't really want to hear a DJ riffing on the latest song or talking about sport or news. So I've become a convert to this stuff. So it's not that radio is shit to me. It's that I've found something better for me.
Yeah,
I'm not saying that's true for everybody.
Absolutely.
Some people like the live stuff. I mean, partly what we're doing here is partly a radio show. So I understand that that's an attractive idea to some people, and for some people it's important to be up to date with the news and get a little bit of a sports update and know that this is happening right here and now, and you can comment on it and call in or whatever. There's something very magical about that.
Absolutely. I'm curious about this conversion, because I'm going to assume, Gareth, that you grew up listening to radio.
Yeah, right? Hell yeah.
So to move from...
There wasn't anything else.
Yeah, to move from listening to radio, like as your main source, and then completely shutting it out and switching to podcast, what... Was that an easy thing to do, even as a broadcaster? Because that was your medium,
so
right?
So it started for me before I'd even stopped doing radio. I started listening to podcasts virtually when it became a thing. And I'm interested in a lot of weird shit. So I'll listen to podcasts about history, for example. Mm. Which
I love history.
Yeah, this is great. So there are a couple of those. Dan Carlin, there's the one that Tom Holland and Dominic Sandbrook do. And I listen to these things. I was listening to one yesterday about the Punic War, the Romans versus the Carthaginians. Now, I know that there are only a few hundred, maybe 1,000 people who are as interested in that stuff as I am. Okay, but would I rather listen to that than a pop culture thing on South African music? Absolutely. But that's for me. Mm. And I'm not telling everybody else to do that. Mm.
Did you feel like you were betraying radio? Did you feel like...
No, God,
there a conflict?
No. Because
you invested. I mean, this is the thing you've been doing for so many years.
No. So I'm also not attached to the idea of podcasts in that way. I'm not romantic about it, or the way you used the word betray. Mm. Storytelling, which is such an important part of good radio...
That's the essence of it, actually.
Exactly. It's the same thing. That is what you rely on in podcasting. And someone who's a great storyteller, or who can make you laugh, make you think, make you cry, involve you in something that you're not actually there for. You're listening across distance and time. Mm. That's a skill that applies equally to radio as it does to podcasting.
It's vital.
I just don't like the format. I don't feel it works. It's like, for example, we can argue about this too. Brands are ruining social media. I posted a thing 2 days ago by a guy who's saying, look, we all need brands to pay for stuff, right? They provide advertising, which keeps the whole media world and the social media world going. The reason that Facebook and X and Instagram are valued where they are in terms of how much they say they're worth is because they attract advertising revenue. But what's happened is brands have ruined these platforms. And as a result, people are running away to ever more different platforms to get away from brands, because it feels like when they walk into a room, like when Donald Trump does, it sucks the air out. Mm. Oh, God, here's this funeral policy advertisement. Why do I need to see that? When that's the one thing I haven't come for today, and now I'm being sold funeral advertising. So radio is just a way of doing the storytelling and the information and the making them laugh and making them cry. But podcasting is in some ways a more distilled version of that, because what we've just had, this conversation, you can't do on your show, because you've got to go to commercials, you've got to go to sport, you've got to go to music, you've got to go to news.
And I'll have half the white people in Joburg saying, get that guy off air!
Yeah, and fuck them. Like, I'll say it because
especially with some of the things we've been talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, but fuck them. I want to, when I sit with someone I care about or someone I'm interested in, I want to talk about the things that we're talking about today.
Sure.
Because the audience deserves that. Mm. We deserve it. If I'm engaged and interested and you're engaged and interested, it's going to be interesting and engaging for other people.
Yeah.
I don't want to be doing a competition. All right, now we'll take the fifth caller here and we'll give away a new Suzuki engine to whoever calls in. And we're going to have like this thing where you have to say something, you have to do something dumb. I mean, we used to come up with competitions every day on that show of mine, and it drove me crazy because someone was paying to give away some piece of shit to one listener and to piss off 99,999 listeners who didn't win.
Yeah,
because all it did was ruin their day, get in their way, and make no sense at all. Hey, Gerald from Fordsburg, congratulations. You've just won a fucking lawnmower. Aren't you excited?
Yeah, I'm really excited. You don't sound excited, Gerald. Try and sound a little more excited, because we don't want the lawnmower company to be cross with us and not pay at the end of the month.
outrageous.
I think most radio people would agree that competitions are the worst thing they have to do on air.
Oh God!
Right?
Not the
because
sales
it's people. It's
they
a brand. That. It's a brand trying to convey a message, and yeah. sometimes they're trying to sell something. And you understand the game, you know, advertisers pay, sure. that's the revenue, that's how we get paid,
sure.
that's how the station makes money, that's how this engine runs, etc. So the challenge perhaps then is for those of us who are still on traditional radio to come up with content that almost makes all these other commercial messages, you know, whatever, as in, you know, really break through. Because there are times when the commercial messaging is really strong, when listeners are saying, there are too many ads. I mean, you know, I don't want to hear that as a broadcaster. There are too many ads. You're not saying anything about my songs.
Well,
you're not saying anything about anything I've said or who I've spoken to,
like,
in an interview.
It's so insulting.
You're telling me there are too many ads?
It's so insulting. Yeah.
So is it then that my content is not, you know, compelling enough that it makes the ad stand out? Or is it that compelling that when there are ads, it's like, no. So that's the thing, right? That's the debate.
By the way, Bitcoin Butt's just calling me out on this. He says, the Real Network gave away 50K to One Oak last year instead of 10K to Five Oaks. Yeah, but you know, can I tell you something? It was because we wanted to get to 50K subscribers in our first couple of months. And we haven't done any of that shit since then. Have you noticed? We stopped it because we realized it was irritating for you. Just for you, Bitcoin Butt. It's all about you.
But you know what I do like? I do like competitions that... that change people's lives to some degree. But you don't have a lot of those. How often do you give away a house?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? So my feeling is, you know, competitions on radio need to have some sort of meaning to listeners. It's got to have some sort of impact. It can't be that some creative had this genius idea that they wanted to have executed so they can get the Lurie Award at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's a big part of it too. Are there still radio awards? Do people give those things out?
Yeah, there are still radio awards. It's actually such a crazy story because when I was at Y for 9 years, our CEO then, Canthan Pillay, who you know, didn't believe in the radio awards. He didn't believe in the idea of YFM participating because he felt that we wouldn't be judged for who we are because the people judging the awards don't understand what we do at YFM. They don't understand our radio. And at the time, I didn't like that. I didn't agree with that because I thought, yes, I hear you, but that's your perspective, right?
Yeah.
There are a lot of us here who want the recognition. And I'm just sort of speaking for broadcasters. Not so much for me. I'm not big. I've won a couple of radio awards, but I'm not. If I don't get one, I'm not hacked.
But at that stage, you were starting your career and you want recognition.
Sure.
When you start. Later on, you're like... depends on what kind of recognition.
Exactly.
Not all recognition is good.
So for 9 years of my career, the first 9 years of my career, there was no acknowledgement. There was no radio award because we never participated.
Right.
And in a way, you almost don't really know how good you are other than your listeners who bump into you or, you know, tweet you or send you an email, etc. But sometimes you want to know what the industry thinks about what you do because it's just one of those things. It may not be the be-all, end-all. But it is just one of those things in your mind. So when I got to Metro, that's when I landed my first award because Metro participates, et cetera, et cetera. And for then it was quite cool. But I'm not big on awards in terms of, you know, like not winning and being hacked and, oh, I didn't get the Ballon d'Or of radio. And
like, oh, Ballon d'Or of radio, please.
I suck. Oh, I suck.
That's so bad.
Oh, I lost to that guy?
I used to laugh because Unati and Kai used to tell me about the fun that you guys had in those early days at YFM. And it sounds like it was just the best place to be in so many ways, right?
Gareth, I mean, it literally was, you know, think about, like, you're young.
Yeah.
You are on this platform that has got reach to
fearless
the people that you connect with. You can say whatever the hell you want. I mean, I remember, you know, on Wednesdays, interestingly, on one of my radio shows that I did in the evening, 6 to 9, we used to talk about sex, but we used to bring like experts. And I remember Dr. Elna McIntosh was
she was great.
Huh? One of those, you know, people that really transformed even my mind to say, wow.
She put her hand up a woman on one of the shows and like, she basically handled her like a puppet. I've never seen anything like it. That was Elna McIntosh.
It's not far-fetched that she would do that. But she would come on as this sexologist and talk about sex in a very liberal, informative, engaging way. I mean, at one stage, we had sex toys in the studio. I invited some of my listeners. Mostly females came through. I think it was only females. They were there.
They tried them out. Right. How exciting.
And for the listener, I can only imagine how the theater of the mind played out there, hearing all the buzzing and, whatever. And so all of these, that's the kind of freedom we had on YFM. But we had an impact, in our space. Radio wasn't just about back announcing songs and playing ads. It was about having an impact in your communities across the region of Gauteng that we broadcasted in.
Slippery Pickle says, can I make slippery pickle dildos for the Real Network to hand out? Just give them to your puss guests and tell them to F themselves.
Am I one of them?
No. This guy, Slippery Pickle's rude.
I can't handle a pickle.
To rude about everyone. And what do you think of the state of TV? Because that's another thing you and I have done in our time.
Sure.
And I feel very fortunate to have experienced television in the time that I did. Because I don't think it's like that anymore. And it's not nostalgia talking now. Mm. We were in the, I think Idols, again, Unati and I, we're on this show. It was the highest rated show on TV for a while. While it was on, there were a couple of seasons where we were unassailable at the top of the ratings. Mm. It was a high budget production. Mm. They had a crew of hundreds of people. Everybody had a very important job to do. It was run like clockwork. It was professional. There were people who were the best in the business doing it. Mm. And I've done some TV since then, and I have to tell you, so much of it is just, it feels so amateurish.
What you mean in terms of the personnel, in terms of
the way that the channels put shit together now, it just feels like it's an afterthought. You can see none of them are making money. The channels are struggling. SABC struggling, ETV struggling, DSTV struggling. They're all really having a hard time because I don't think they caught on quickly enough that things were changing.
It's interesting you say that because I... similarly like you with the radio thing, grew up a lot on TV, etc. But I don't watch TV that much
anymore. I don't watch it at all.
I don't know if it's because the content is shit or if it's just me selecting what I want to watch, right? So you're
making the same argument I made for podcasts.
Absolutely. Yeah. To say there are certain shows that I want to watch, whether it's The Blacklist or Lioness or Homeland. Or documentaries, or
what is Lioness? People are telling me I got to watch
this. It's an absolutely brilliant show. It's brilliant. Zoe Saldana is there, Morgan Freeman, and it really follows this elite group of military personnel who work with the CIA,
okay,
and they kind of deal with various geopolitical issues that America is involved in.
You reckon I should watch it?
I think you should watch it. If that's your kind of tea, absolutely
people
watch
keep
it.
Mentioning it to me.
So if I'm not watching series, then it's sport or selective things, right? And so I don't know what the latest TV show is on Mzansi Magic that's driving everybody insane. And no disrespect, now and then I'll watch something that I'm really interested in. I know Shaka Ilembe is coming out. I love history, so that'll
be good.
That's something. So I don't know whether TV is shit or not. I also hear stories about channels struggling, and I'm thinking, what's going on? Is it YouTube? Is it the younger generation? But there's also an older generation, a huge generation of people that grew up on TV. Yeah. Are they also migrating a bit, or is it more options out there for people to say, you don't have to sit and watch this thing the whole time? You can watch other things on your phone, on your tablet, etc. Is there more competition for eyeballs?
Maybe. I don't miss that either, by the way. I think TV is, this. It's a lot of hurry up and wait.
Ooh.
And that just drives me crazy. Because, again, it's so different to radio, which I was used to at the time. Radio, you'd pitch up, switch that mic on, and you go. Then it's live. It doesn't – you don't do – like 3 hours of post-production and 3 hours of preparation, and you have to do this and that, and this isn't, let's record that again.
Oh, my word.
No, radio's live, so once it's done, it's finished.
It's madness. I mean, I remember I was, interestingly, I was a judge on one of these talent search competitions called The Remix.
Yeah.
And it was about, you know, finding the best remixes in the country, etc. And we shot literally the whole day. Call time would be like 11. You only start shooting at like 2. So what am I doing for 3 hours, right?
Oh, man.
You know, because it is a lot of hurry up and wait.
Imagine being an actor.
Oh, yeah. I mean, their call times are like, what, 6 o'clock? Guys,
yeah, and then they spend the whole day sitting there drinking shit coffee or just on their phones, I suppose. And then, like, they get to shoot for half an hour and that's it.
And that's it.
You're like, my whole day? You had to take up my whole day?
Yeah.
I'd go crazy.
I had a couple of cameos on one of the TV shows in SABC1, Bettina. It's spin-off of Ugly Betty.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, coming on as myself, etc. And same thing. It's like you hurry up and wait. So I'm thinking, oh my gosh. I would always tell the producers, I'm like, okay, listen, darling. Do you want me there at 2 or are we starting to shoot at 5? Like, kind of. but you know what? You know what I did enjoy, Gareth? I did a, I had a role on Trending SA, which was on SABC3. It was a daily show covering current affairs, whatever's on social media,
I
and
remember
in the news,
that
et cetera. I was on there for about a year and I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a live show, number one.
Yeah.
Number two, it was literally what was happening that day or was topical in that week or at that time. And that to me, like, resonated with me because it was real.
Yeah.
You could get into issues. We might have spoken about you, I don't remember. But, you know, it really, I don't know what you may have done then.
Neither do I.
But it really was that kind of show where we spoke about everything that was happening and everybody who was making news, you know, anyone who was topical. And that's the kind of TV I enjoy doing,
yeah.
Right? And then it dawned on me that growing up watching, you know, late night talk shows.
Yes.
You know, David Letterman. You know, Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel, Chelsea Lately, you know, all those late, that is the thing I enjoy the most. And then I realized that this is why I enjoyed late night talk shows, because of the stuff they did and some of the skits they did and all of that stuff.
I think that was also a very special time in television, but there wasn't anything else.
Yeah.
You know, when Letterman and Leno were doing those shows, And it was super competitive, and they had massive shares of audience, both of them.
Mm.
There wasn't the internet.
Mm.
And what we've got to come to terms with is that everyone is now in competition with everyone. Right now,
sure.
There are people who might not watch you and I having this conversation because they want to watch a kid unboxing a toy.
Yeah.
So we can sit here and go, oh, that's really stupid. Yeah. But if people choose to watch the unboxing of the toy...
That's what it is.
You can't argue with them.
You know, there's a viral clip that's going around and that's what people want to watch. Or
yeah.
They want to go on Instagram and watch people's toes the whole day. Whatever it is.
Yeah, and just reaction videos.
Reaction right. videos. That's a thing now.
That's a thing.
A huge thing.
They've been telling me we got to do reaction videos. I'm like, well, the show is just my reacting to things that are happening.
One of my favorite reaction videos, and a series of them, different YouTubers, was during the Rugby World Cup.
Yeah.
And how Americans were just like blown away by this rugby thing and like just how they reacted. It's like, oh man, it was just, you know, and I sat there watching those reaction videos, right?
But Americans are good at reacting. They do that naturally. I think it's got something to do with show and tell at school when they're kids, you know, because they do all kinds of things we don't do. And they're told by their parents, you can be a TV star, you could be a Hollywood actor or whatever. I don't know. Mm-hmm. We in this country, we're like, you better be humble and you better shut up.
Yeah, I mean, I you know, for some time I gave away bursaries and I still do it, you know, putting people through school to do media.
Mm.
And over the years...
Because you were at Boston.
Yeah,
right?
I was at Boston.
Right.
Over the years, I would always be interested in the parents and what they say to their kids about, you know, this idea of getting into broadcasting. And a lot of kids would say that their parents feel... You know, broadcasting is not a real career. Entertainment is not a real career. But I think over the years that has changed. And I think that's why institutions like Boston and the likes still exist, because there's a need to train people for the various industries that we have.
Oh, I wish you wouldn't do that. It's just so, it's so horrible what you're saying now, because there are only like 10 spaces.
No, but
and the, now yeah. you're giving these. When someone says they want to study broadcasting or something, I say to them, no. That's a terrible idea. Go and become a teacher or a doctor or a social worker or start your own business. That's what we need. And then they go, oh, but I love radio, I love TV, and I want to talk on the microphone. I'm like, do something else. You're doing the opposite.
Here's what I say.
Now I've found out who it is that's telling all these fuckers to go and do that stuff. It's you.
It's me. I'm responsible. Arrest me. Arrest that man. Arrest him now. The thing is, I'm very honest about the industry to a lot of people.
So you say I'm being dishonest.
I even go as far as saying, okay, here's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
We're going to record you on the mic and we're going to give you an experience.
Yeah.
Just, you know, try it out. You think you've got it, whatever. Try it out. Listen back to your shit and then you tell me if this is what you envisaged.
You have the time for this?
Yeah, I make the time for it. I help people with radio demos, Gareth. You'd never do that.
Uh-uh. Not a chance.
I do that all the time.
No.
Because I understand that radio, especially from an on-air point of view, is not for everyone. You've got to have the talent, but it's very brutal. It's either you have it or you don't.
Sure.
Whatever it is. Whatever your magic is, it's either you have it or you don't. In a room of 20 people, not everybody's going to get that radio gig. So you've got to be really, really special to be on radio. It doesn't always appear that way when we see some of the things that do happen where anybody just walks in and boom, they've got a radio gig. But the point is, you've got to be special. You've got to, you know, one actor that I respect, Eric Mien, he's also very controversial on his views. He once said that you need to have above average intelligence to be on radio. Now, you can either take that literally or take it in what he's trying to say you've got to know more than the average Joe. One of the reasons people like you, Gareth, is because you seem to know a lot.
Well, they're wrong.
And there's something about listening to people who have a general sense of things than you. That you may not be an expert in any of those things, quite frankly, but that is one of the biggest appeals and the reasons why, you know, people listen to radio. And so you've got to remember that. And so I always tell, you know, young people to say, listen, just because you want to be on radio, it doesn't mean you're going to get that opportunity. It doesn't mean you're going to get the shot.
That's true. Listen, I applaud the fact that you're helping young people who want to get into broadcasting, because some of them just might need that word of encouragement to launch an incredible career. Mm. But I don't think we need any more broadcasters.
What do you think we need?
We need engineers, teachers, doctors.
We've always needed
policemen. That. We need people who are starting up little trading businesses, people who are salvaging electronics, all kinds of unglamorous but very, very important jobs.
Absolutely. 100%.
It's easy, again, for us to talk about the high-profile media jobs or the CEO jobs, and everybody thinks that that's everyone's dream. It's not everyone's dream. There are kids who want to be policemen.
Mm.
You know, I remember being a little kid and I didn't want to be an astronaut. Or there was a time where I thought, like, I could be a damn fine history teacher.
Mm.
And I think maybe that would be my B or C or D plan if everything fucked out. I'd go and teach history, mostly because I'd love it, because no one becomes a history teacher for the money. Right? But there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm.
And because a career is exciting and gets you that reputation we were talking about in the first hour with social media, it seems like it should be a more lucrative and exciting career prospect for people. But actually, like, we need the people who are keeping things clean, who are fixing the roads, who are doing the electricity connections that go up and down, that are plumbing. And I don't mean to patronize these people at all, because let me tell you, I speak a lot about electricians and plumbers and how vital they are in our society.
Oh, yeah.
And we need people who can put up the street signs and fix them, and people who can make geysers and boilers and things like that. Doesn't sound like a glamorous and front-facing public job, but man, those people are so important. Yeah. Society grinds to a halt if you don't have those people. They're less radio people, it's not going to grind to a halt. You know?
It's one of the things that I always joke about, to say when the world ends, for example, and there's some sort of like devastation, right?
Yeah.
Do you think a radio host is going to be saved?
No. No one's going to say, shit, you know, my zombie apocalypse team, need a radio
There's
guy.
A show you should watch called Paradise. You should watch that show. Brilliant. It's also similar.
Is that the one with the...
Yes, with the dome,
etc.
Yeah,
yeah, okay. So
I doubt there's a radio host in that dome.
So I started it. Yeah, I started watching that show, and then I just fell off. This happens to me often. I'll watch a show, and then I just like, nah. This is no good. So I'll pick it up again because I still want to see how it ends, but I just lost interest.
Yeah. Gareth, one of the things that I did a lot of, you know, on my radio career, particularly at Wired Metro, was try and profile people in different careers, however I pitched it as a feature or as something I did regularly, to try and create the idea that there's more to life than being a rap star, a DJ, a singer.
Sure.
I remember interviewing the first black female pilot that I'd ever met. I think her name is Tumi Katisi. Pardon if I got the surname wrong, right? And she learned how to fly. There's a school here in Germiston.
Mm.
I didn't know about it. We went there. I said, show me what you learned. Because I know not everybody can be a pilot. It's damn expensive, etc. She was young and she's still a pilot. And so those are the things that excited me to say, this is what I want people to see. That it's not just, you know, radio DJs and celebrities and whatever that make the world tick. There's many other things that you can do, and that's what we need.
I want to know what you think of the Emmanuel Macron video. I saw this yesterday and I thought there's got to be a joke, right? The red sleeve you will see entering stage left is his wife Brigitte Macron. Don't be like that. Simpiwe watches Candace Owens and she thinks that Brigitte Macron is a man. Right? Is that right?
Yes.
That's a fair summary.
Boys being boys.
And she says it's just boys being boys. But you take a look at this. Tell me if this is a domestic dispute gone horribly wrong in front of the cameras. Wow. Okay. So, as Mo said, she doesn't even take his hand when he reaches out at the top of the stairs to like walk down with her. Oof, she's like, no.
That is actually what gives credence to the fact that there was a dispute. That whatever was going on there, which we don't know, wasn't so cool.
But I think this proves that she is a woman. Because a woman would continue to hold a grudge after the physical interaction. A guy, if it was a guy fighting with a guy, they'd hit each other and then they'd carry on. They'd move on.
Yeah, there was definitely some sort of disagreement. I don't know what about. But it also just shows you, you know, these people are human. They have fights before some occasion that they need to go to. A sitting president can have a fight with their partner before they address the nation. You know, they're human. Yeah,
have you seen Melania's face sometimes? She sometimes doesn't want to be there, right?
There are endless videos. There are endless videos of that. And so it just, but then what it also does is, I mean, is it a fair reflection of their relationship? I mean, you can't take one incident and say, oh, that marriage or whatever is a shit show.
So Conga Chris says that's Elton John in a wig. If you look closely, she uses both hands, says Sharon. Judas says it's straight up GBV. Someone had one drink too many on the plane. Slippery Pickle says gays hold grudges too. Bitcoin Butt said he got manhandled with a big capital M-A-N. Wolf Printing says they say they were joking around, but she is a man. See, people people love a conspiracy theory.
Look, rugby's big in France, so so we definitely know where she got that from.
She's been watching the rugby. Oh man, what a crazy, insane world we live in.
Yeah.
Because this kind of stuff would never have made it into the public realm before.
Absolutely.
I love the fact that so much of the shit they can't hide anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
The press isn't the press. It's now like people with phones.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't have to be a credentialed journalist
no.
who has a degree and works for a reputable news agency like, you know, Agence France Presse, for example.
Yeah.
Now, if Macron and his wife are having a fight and she like decks him or grabs his face on the plane, we're all going to see it.
Yeah, whether you want to call it citizen journalism or whatever. Now we're in the realm, Gareth, where people say, oh, the camera person had one job, you know, to get the real angle that everybody wanted to see.
Yeah.
You know, whether it was a fight or something controversial that happened is like, you know, that recording, that moment where people say, hang on, where's my phone?
Yeah.
Let me record this. That almost...
What I find very odd, though, and I want to have your thoughts on this too, is these people who record everything. Like I saw this chick the other day. She was in a car accident. And then the first thing she does in her car accident is, well, I've just been in a car accident. You're like, honey, you've got things to sort out. The last thing on my mind if sure. I were in a car accident would be, oh, I need to record this and post it on my Instagram.
Sure.
That's bizarre.
It is absolutely bizarre. And it's almost like, what are you looking for?
And when you see someone else... Like you see these people, there's someone who's in real trouble.
Mm.
And instead of helping that person, yeah. they film it.
Yeah, of course. I saw a video of somebody recording somebody getting hijacked. And obviously it's quite tricky, but I'm thinking, you know, is there no one you can call to say, listen, this has yeah. just happened, call the police,
right.
alert them, give them whatever info. And so that's the world we live in, where people are so obsessed with, you know, posting content about whatever is happening in their lives. And the question I have is it for approval? Is it for, like, what is it for? Especially in moments where you're supposed to be a citizen first and then a content creator after.
Just attention seeking. What is your policy with your kids? Are you worried about this stuff? Because whenever I have parents in here, I'm always like, shit, how are you going to deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, I was saying to someone the other day that my daughter, who's 9, speaks so fast. And I'm like, it's the damn YouTube videos. Because all these guys, that's how they speak, right? Yeah. And so it just shows you the impact that sort of stuff has, because she spends a lot of time on YouTube. We control it as much as possible. But, you know, the reality is that the online world, the online space, that is their playing field.
Yeah.
We talk about, you know, stuff, you know, whether it's stuff that's got bad language, things that are promoting.
Has she got her own phone?
She's got an iPhone.
At 9?
At 9. I mean, that's even by my standards, it's absolutely diabolical.
Yeah. I mean, but what are you going to do, right? Because, again, I'm reticent to hop into this. I don't have kids, but I see my nephews and I'm like, just keep those phones away from them as long as possible.
Yeah, we tried. We tried. But now when you have, because I've got a couple of kids, and so obviously when my son got a phone at age 10, it's like, yeah, but he got a phone when he was this age. I also need to get a phone.
Right.
It was a hand-me-down, but it's still an iPhone and it's still a phone.
Sure.
And she's got full access and she has a tablet.
You remember those shit phones we used to have, like before they brought out smartphones?
Yeah, yeah. The first phone I got was like a Motorola. It looked like an Easter egg. I mean, all you could do was snake and make a phone call. Play snake, exactly. Make a phone call. That's play right. Tetris, make a phone call. Send an SMS.
Eventually gave us the SMS, but you'd have to type like 5 times on the P to get a Q, you know?
You know, and who sends SMSs these days? We send WhatsApp messages and iMessages and whatever. Yeah. So we're very cognizant about that sort of stuff in our household. But one of the biggest issues I have is the headsets. And, you know, my teenage son will be sitting there, you know, with his pods in, and I'd say something and I'd get no reaction. And then I say something and then I get no reaction. And then I look at him and he has no clue. He's in his own world. He's listening to Travis Scott. And
suddenly you become like one of those TV dads from the 90s. He's like, do you hear me? You know, kind of thing.
And then I'm always like one ear out. Like I lose my shit.
Yeah.
Right? Because I always say to him, what if there's an emergency? What if somebody needs help? What if, you know, we're being robbed?
Please, like, they've shown these people who, like, they get hit by trains. They walk straight into poles because they're not paying attention. They can't hear what's going on around them.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I heard a story about a lady who was jogging with her headsets on, and she got hit by a car.
Huh,
and apparently the driver was hooting.
Well,
I don't
serves
know if
her right
control.
For running, because, I mean, that's just a stupid thing to do.
I mean, so I always lose it with him. I'm like... dude, like, yes, I get it, but you can't have, especially when you're at home.
Yeah.
You're with people, you've got people around you.
Yeah.
Like, are you saying that we don't matter?
Mm.
You know, yes, Kelvin Momo is an amazing Amapiano producer, but for God's sake.
Not now.
You know what I'm saying?
Not now.
Like, you can't.
What's the connection to Lesotho?
So my grandfather is from there. So my mom's dad is from there. He came to South Africa as a migrant worker. And he also apparently had terrible migraines. And for some reason, no one in Lesotho could deal with that from a medical point of view.
Oh, okay. And so he came here for treatment.
Yeah. And then he worked in the mines. At some stage, he was enlisted in the army in that whole complexity.
Did they sort out his migraines? This is very important.
No, it was never sorted. It was never sorted. And then he settled in Soweto. He forms part of a generation that would probably be regarded as pioneering. Mm. I mean, he was born in 1923, so you can imagine. Moved to Soweto, set up a life in Soweto.
You were born in Dube, right?
Yes, I was born in Dube, Soweto. He had a couple of shops in Soweto. He had a football club that he started. So that kind of story, right? But Lesotho is home because that is where my ancestors are from.
Sure.
Whether it's my mother's father or my dad's father. So I spend a lot of time there. I have a lot of family there. I even did the Mushweshwe walk last year, which is a popular walk. It's basically a celebration and a commemoration of the journey that
of King Mushweshwe and the original Lesotho people.
Exactly. Yeah. Because without that journey, Lesotho would never have existed. Because essentially it was about Mushweshwe moving his people from, you know, war and, you know, being attacked.
He took them up on that mountain.
Yes, on Thabo Busiu.
Busiu.
Yeah, and from Thabo Busiu, he was able to defend his country. Yes, he enlisted the help of, I think it was Queen Victoria at the time.
Sure.
And that's why Lesotho became
a protectorate. And he made a couple of deals with the Afrikaners at some stage. Yeah, but he was an operator.
Absolutely. You know, before diplomacy was diplomacy, I think that's kind of like what he demonstrated. So what Lesotho represents for me is more than just, you know, a home of my ancestors. It's like a symbol. And I know people talk about, it's the 10th province. Let's just take it.
It's amazing. I mean, I think that what you've just told me about the history of Lesotho is exactly why people should pay attention to the place, even though what was it Trump said, who even knows where Lesotho is?
That time there's an entire U.S. embassy 5 minutes from the border. 5 minutes from the border. There's an embassy there.
But the story of Lesotho becoming an independent nation actually has to do with Pixlika Isakaseme as well, who made representation in London at the time that, you know, Britain was divesting itself of colonial interests and all the rest of it. And he secured the independence of Lesotho and Swaziland at that stage, now Eswatini. and he was a remarkable human being because, again, showing you that excellence has no obstacles in its way, right? Mm. This guy was educated at American Ivy League universities.
Sure.
And at Cambridge in the UK, and then went over as a black man before black people even had a vote in the Republic of South Africa. He established the ANC, started it. He was the founder, along with Dube, and then went there as a lawyer and made representations to the British government and said, this shouldn't be considered part of the Union of South Africa. Mm. These are separate countries that told the story of Mushweshwe and how Lesotho started and told the story of the king of Swaziland at that stage too. Mm.
And so that to me represents sovereignty.
Mm.
You can't just say Lesotho is a 10th province because it's landlocked. There's
Didn't
a reason.
They invade us
the treaty.
I mean, when
it was the other way around.
Mangosuthu. Okay, I don't want to get this wrong.
It was the other way around.
Mangosuthu Buthelezi was like acting president.
Yeah. And
we know these Zulus.
He just Simpio, had one
your
job.
People, hey? Flex, your people.
And I mean,
give the Zulus this much of a chance, they'll try and take Lesotho again.
And I think obviously there was a lot of political unrest, and I think the leadership in Lesotho at the time had kind of given the sense that they can't handle this on their own, and I think that's the signal he took to say, listen,
we must be careful, because if the people in Lesotho decide to piss in that water, we're going to end up drinking it.
Yeah. I mean, those mountains, Gareth, are full of water. Those are among some of the highest mountains in the world. It's beautiful. I mean, the beauty, the potential of that country. So for me, Lesotho represents sovereignty. It represents an idea of that Moshoeshoe started to say, these are my people, I will protect them by all means necessary from all the impact. That's why there's never really been apartheid in Lesotho, right? Because they were never, they were a protectorate of Britain. They were never under, you know, oppressive rule.
But dude, I love that you're proud of that. Not, again, because I go around telling people I'm proud of them, but because there is something about identity. You know, when you know where you come from and you know where you're going to, I think you have that connection in a way that it means you don't have to prove things to other people all the time. Because you've got a sense of self, a sense of conviction and purpose, a clarity of vision that just makes all the rest of it a game.
Yeah.
You're like, well, okay. For the last 200-300 years, that's where my people have come from.
Yeah.
That's where I feel most at home. Would you ever like have a place there?
Yes.
Like a little place up in the mountains?
Were you going to say a little rendezvous?
No, I was going to say, I don't know. I mean, you've probably done okay out of media. I'm sure you could afford more than a rendezvous.
Definitely.
Do you wear the Seronta?
Mokoroto.
Mokoroto.
Yeah, the Sotho hat.
What was I calling it?
I don't know what you were, because it looks like a bit like the roof of a rendezvous. Maybe that's why. Yeah, the Mokoroto Basotho.
And the blanket,
hat.
You got one of those?
And the blanket, Siana Marena.
Right.
I've got plenty of those. And it's winter, so they'll be quite useful.
Damn, dude. I need one.
Yeah, but I would definitely build a home there, and it's something that's literally on my priority list. And it's a priority because I want to be able to have a claim in the land of my forefathers.
Damn right.
And then
give your children that as part of their legacy.
Absolutely. And so that's the one thing about, you know, my future that I'm really excited about at a personal level. And I mean, you know, like I said, I think Lesotho represents so much. I love the running jokes about Zamazamas and all of that. And it's, you know, it's all true. And I hate the fact that they're involved in all sorts of, you know, criminal activity. You know, we can debate that type of mining and
those
what we need to
just
do.
Just people from Lesotho.
Yeah, but some of them are. Some of them are. But, you know, by and large, Lesotho has had a really pivotal role in building South Africa, whether it's through the labor, as in people, from Lesotho, migrant workers building roads and working in the mines, etc., and on many other social, cultural levels. So, yeah, it's a very important place for me.
Yeah, and I know that you're also a massive football fan. I know next to zero about football, but I get really excited around World Cup time. And then, you know, when I was a kid, when I was like 14, 15, I knew everything. I knew who was on what teams. And I'm talking locally. I even joined the Sundown Supporters Club.
You did what?
Yeah, Mamelodi Sundowns Supporters Club. I knew all those players back then. And then again, like with these series, you just lose interest along the way. Sure. What is it that keeps you interested in football? Because some of it has become, to my eyes, formulaic.
Oh, you mean the diving and
even all the buying of this talent for this club and the managers and
it's glam. It's Hollywood. Yeah,
it's like the WWE
to me. It's big
these
business.
These guys pretending, you know?
No, look, I played football from when I was very young. I even played for a club called Marks Park in Emerentia.
Yeah.
I don't even know if it's still around, but I know the...
I know the park's still there.
The park is still there, yes, absolutely. Not so sure about the football club.
Okay.
You know, played there as a kid. When I got to high school, Gareth, there was no football. It was just rugby. Because I went to Northcliffe High. That's where I matriculated. And it was like the biggest sort of, you know, shock of my life. I'm thinking, what sport am I going to do?
Yeah.
I tried hockey. I tried the closest thing to football, which
Jesus,
at the time was
dangerous.
Hockey.
Oh. Hockey's dangerous. That's not.
I got missed by a ball once during, I think it was a corner, and I didn't get off the line in goal and whatever. But football, has been an integral part of my life. My grandfather owned a football club, City Ramblers, back in those days. I support Kaiser Chiefs, I support Barcelona. I even have my own sort of like social club.
Chiefs and Barcelona.
Yeah.
Those are pretty good. You haven't had to change your position on either of those.
No, they've done okay. Yeah, Barcelona is incredible. Chiefs have a great reputation.
A bit disappointing.
But very disappointing. Great reputation, great brand, but just can't seem to get the silverware going. Yes, we got a cup now, which was great. But it's more than just the, you know, running around the pitch and whatever. It just represents, there's so many people in football that I rate as well.
You know who I rate and is undervalued in the history of South Africa is Kaiser Motaung. I mean, that guy, for good or for bad, he set up a dynasty.
Yeah.
And he set up a club and he had such an important role to play at the beginning. He obviously, you know, he didn't last as long as Ivan Khoza in that, you know.
Yeah, at the forefront.
I'm the boss of this club kind of thing.
Sure.
But those guys had to be pretty gangster in those days to get shit going.
Absolutely, because that's right? That's the terrain they're in. I have the utmost respect for Dr. Kaiser Motaung. I think he's an example. He's a beacon. You know, that transcends football, really. And I agree with you. And I think he is highly respected. We don't see a lot of him now. Mm. And I suppose, you know,
he's
age
old,
and all of that. But that's what we need more of, you know, across the spectrum. We need more people like Kaiser Motaung who will build things from scratch, literally from the dust.
Yeah, that's what he did.
Yeah, yeah.
And he turned it into a football brand, which is so beloved in this country.
Yeah, yeah, so and well known.
So I'm not going to mock you for the lack of silverware, as you put it. I do want to just refer to this, and I hate today, it sounds like an obituary column, but this can't, you know, we can't end the show without mentioning this guy, because Presley Chenwechai, who was a South African actor best known for his role in the Oscar-winning film Tsotsi, which you will remember, has died at the age of 40. He was also born in Soweto, and news of his death has elicited an outpouring of grief on social media, fans expressing shock and sorrow. A recent captionless image posted on his official Instagram account has further underscored the somber mood among his followers. I don't know any details about what happened to him, but this was, I mean, at 40, he's still a young man, you know? And it seemed to me like he still had so much ahead of him. What a sad story.
Absolutely. Great talent. Hell of a guy. I know him sort of, you know, beyond the screens. We've met many times.
Yeah?
In fact, the first time I met him was at some dingy spot in Bella Bella that I was booked to go play at as a DJ.
Yeah.
Some years ago. So there I am, you know, playing. I'm enjoying my set. And then I just see this guy come up straight up to me, and he's just like so excited to see me, and he's happy and he's lit. The first time I met him.
What a great sort of memory, because I've interviewed him maybe two or three times, but for you to have actually known him and seen him when he's not performing.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not being interviewed.
Yeah.
I wonder what happened.
I wonder what happened. It's a mystery, and we wait to see. But my first interaction with the guy is literally what we got to see as his character on The River, which was the same kind of guy. And in my mind, I'm thinking, like, this is perfect. The role you play is actually who you are. And we had a really good time that night, and then I'd bump into him a lot at parties and whatever. And
do you still do gigs?
Yeah, I still do gigs.
Oof, you enjoying that stuff?
I enjoy it. I don't do as many as I, you know, this whole thing of 4 gigs in one night. I heard somebody
the other day, because I got into an Uber, and there was someone on, I don't even know what station it was or whatever, and this girl was rattling off. She was going to 3 different places that night. And I thought, she must be very tired.
Yeah, no, it is.
I mean, I did 3 once on a night in December in a year, and I was like, nah, this is terrible. Because it was, I landed in PE, I had something in PE, then I had to go to some other place, then some other place.
Sure.
I had to drive the whole way there.
Yes.
It was like, you can't do this. Bad things are going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly has evolved with me. I mean, I've gone through my phases where I'd have a gig in Soweto, then go to Pretoria, then go to Rustenburg, then have like a 4 a.m. at Taboo in Santos. I've done all of that. Like carnage. like absolute carnage. Like you break your back, like you really just crush your balls.
And the next day you're a disaster.
Oh,
right?
You finished. But the recovery then was different. I mean, now it's a bit.
I think one of the reasons I never. Yeah, we are getting. We are older, and hangovers last a long time, and it's not fun.
You only recover by Wednesday.
Definitely.
Yeah. So this has recovered me.
But I think one of the things that did keep me doing that for long and surviving was that I never did more than Fridays and Saturdays because of the morning show.
Sure.
So I'd have to be up early. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So you could only do 2 days of that.
Sure.
Which means you had to get back into it. Work
Absolutely.
Hard, play hard. You know?
Now, crazy story, Gareth. During my time at Y, I mean, I would have a gig, say, at Capital on a Thursday night and then have a radio show in the morning at 6.
Yes.
And sometimes
I did one or two of those.
You're literally leaving from the club.
And you look and you smell like shit, but luckily it's radio,
Straight
right?
Straight to the studio.
And everyone else who's working with you is looking at you like, this guy smells like he's been in a shebeen.
Exactly.
Smoke.
And half the time your team is there with you. So the whole team is like, is a mess. And that was just the rock star nature of the lifestyle that we had, etc. But one thing I really love about DJing, I mean, I was in Middleburg on Saturday.
Yeah.
Is the traveling, Gareth. I got to know my country through the different areas in the country that I got booked at.
And from the people you meet,
yes,
I think is true.
But yes.
But what about the...
I mean, who goes to Upington? I was in Upington, right? You know, Tula Mahashi in Mpumalanga. I mean, for fuck's sake, you know what I mean? And there you are. So you're literally playing everywhere from Durban to Cape Town, Port Elizabeth, you know, Botshabelo, Tabanchu, you name it. And I really got to know my country. I got to understand the socioeconomic complexities. You know, when you get to a town, and there was a place in the Northern Cape, I think it's Postmansburg or something like that.
Yeah.
And I got there and I said, do these people even know they're in South Africa? Do they know that Cyril is their president? Like, are they aware that they're actually
Probably
citizens?
Not.
Because that's how remote it felt.
Yeah.
And then you get the sense. I mean, I grew up in Soweto, right? And then you get to Galeshewe for the first time in Kimberley, and you're like, what is going on? People live like this? Like,
different
what?
World.
Different world. And that's what it showed me.
I think that's a very valid lesson to have picked up on. The other one that I was grateful for when I was doing those gigs, because I stopped doing them about 8 years ago. But it was good to do because it keeps you in touch with what people are up to, what they care about, what they're interested in, music.
Yeah,
you mix with such a variety of people. You know, where am I going to interact with 18, 20, 25-year-olds?
Sure.
In my group of friends otherwise? Where am I going to interact with people from totally different parts of South Africa? See what they are interested in. See what they care about. And have conversations with them.
Because,
you know, that's the nice thing about staying after it at a gig like that is you have a few drinks with people.
Sure.
You will find something interesting out.
Absolutely. And also with language. You know, like there's different brands of Setswana, whether in the Northwest or the Northern Cape. There's different brands of Sesotho, whether in the Free State or whether in the Vaal or whether, you know what I mean? And all these things
but
just become
200 different kinds of Indian and Afrikaans accent that I picked up on the way too, man. Yes.
Durban.
Big time. Sure.
No, hey, but it's beautiful, yeah.
Did you hear about this? A South African Powerball player won 68 million rand after purchasing a ticket via the Absa banking app.
All I'm going to say with that, and I'm not sure if they've claimed their money yet.
They have.
If I won that kind of money, I wouldn't quit my job.
No.
I wouldn't quit.
You wouldn't tell anyone except maybe your wife.
Yeah. But can you imagine if I won that kind of money?
Maybe.
Gareth, How would I conceal that?
Oh, dude.
How would I hide that I've won 65 million as a public figure?
You can ask people at the, what is it?
Ituba.
You can say to them, I don't want anyone to know. but I mean, what would you do? Splash out and buy fancy things? I saw Waras talking about Mac G this week. Someone posted a video of Mac G driving some drop top car, and they said he's living his best life, kind of thing. And Waras said Mac G is actually a very frugal guy. He doesn't doesn't flash his money around. He just adds up the paper, is what he said.
Yeah, yeah.
Would you be flashy? Or
no, I wouldn't
you,
be flashy.
You wouldn't tell anybody.
No, no, no.
But
I wouldn't be flashy.
But you'd have that pile of cash.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, you know, I would have a pile of cash, you know, a couple of really good properties, maybe a couple of developments working.
You'd help
on,
out a few people here and there.
Well, help out my entire family.
Sure.
And do something meaningful, but also, you know, take care of myself and take care of my family. I wouldn't buy a G-Wagon.
Nah,
you know?
Hell no. Hell no.
But I would get a very... But you see, this is the thing, Gareth. It's like when you've experienced all these things, it's like, you know, I drive a Merc. I've driven all the cars I've ever wanted.
And once you got that out of your system...
Exactly.
You don't want it anymore. And I don't think that... Sure, when you're in your 20s, I think you want to do that stuff. Every guy worth his salt is going to want to drive a sports car, right?
Yeah.
It comes a point though where you go, actually, especially for you now, I'm with you, I've got the kids, I got to have something to transport them to and from school and all this shit.
Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah, exactly. And all the netball tournaments.
So it becomes practical. And you don't eventually think about it. You just get into the car. You hope it has aircon if it's hot, heater if it's cold.
Yeah.
You could play some music. You could listen to your phone.
It's got space. It can load my entire family.
You can put shit in the back because there's always so much shit to put in the car.
Let me tell you.
And you can use it to go away if you want to go away. Absolutely. But that's kind of all you're thinking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I wouldn't be flashy. I wouldn't rock up at a club and buy 10 bottles of Ace of Spades.
No.
I'm not that kind of person. And also, I feel like nobody really cares about that aspect of my life. And nobody cares what I drive. Nobody cares how big my house is or what sneakers I wear.
But that's great. That's the perfect place to be.
Yeah, because I've never made it a thing for me. Yeah. I appreciate quality. I love clothes. I love sneakers. I love a nice car, but it's not who I am. It doesn't define the essence of who I am.
Okay, so no private plane or yacht for you.
Oh, no.
Judas says, great guest today. Got Gareth and the live chats fired up. Go Mo, elbow cough. Well, I know why you're doing an elbow cough, but yeah, Judas, you're right. You have been you've been a tremendous guest. I knew you would be, by the way, but just because you're so good at this stuff. In any case, it's your job, and you know exactly what you're doing. But I've had a lot of fun talking to you this morning. Thank
Gareth, it's been an absolute pleasure. It's always an honor because I think you know, and I'll say this to everybody listening in and watching now that Gareth is one of the broadcasters that I've always admired.
I grew up
listening to Gareth Cliff. I loved the type of radio you did. I appreciated the kind of impact that you had in your own space. You know, getting people talking, writing letters to the president, all of that stuff is, you know, that's what it is, right? That's what it's about. And so thank you for inspiring a generation of broadcasters. You, in my opinion, are one of those people.
Thanks, man. That's
who didn't waste, you know, your time on air. And so when I get to interact with you at this level, for me, it's always an honor and it's always a privilege, honestly.
Well, I'm sorry it's taken so long, but I'm very happy to have you here. And thank you. Thank you for that. I've had to learn to become better at taking compliments, but it's a great pleasure to sit and talk to someone who I regard as a peer in the industry. And long may your success continue.
Thank you. Thank you. And yours as well.
Thanks, Mo.
Yeah. All right. And good luck to waking up.
Yeah, don't worry. We're going to be fixing that soon too. I've got plans. All right, everybody. Have an excellent Wednesday and enjoy this middle of the week stuff. We'll be back on Friday morning early with Simpiwe back in this seat instead of that seat. But we've still got time for her to do all kinds of things. She's impressed. I mean, look, she brought you in here, Mo. Who knows? Maybe we just we keep Simpiwe, huh? What do you think? Producer Sims. Among other things. Don't tell James. He's got enough to worry about at the moment. All right. Thank you, Flex. Thank you, Sims. Most of all, thank you to you. We will see you on Friday. Bye.